my name is Richard Broom, and we're going to talk about the Morse code. You know, the mighty White Star ocean liner, the RMS Titanic, should not have hit an iceberg and should not have sunk in 1912, but it did. And Morse code has something to do with the sinking of the Titanic. Let's go back in time. Late in the evening on the 14th of April 1912, the Titanic was speeding across the Atlantic, and the Titanic's wireless operator, Jack Phillips, was trying to send a backlog of passenger telegrams to a shore station at Cape Race in Newfoundland. Phillips had a backlog of telegrams because his wireless equipment had been faulty for a time during the previous day. Importantly, there were two other nearby ships who were sending iceberg reports by wireless. We also know that those icebergs were drifting into the Titanic's path. Whilst Phillips was transmitting his telegrams using what was then a state-of-the-art rotary spark gap Morse code transmitter, two wireless officers on two other nearby ships, the steamship Mesaba and the steamship Californian, sent, at different times, different lookout for the iceberg warning messages to all the ships in the area using their own spark gap wireless transmitters. Here's the problem. In those early days of radio, or wireless as it was known back then, the spark gap transmitters sent out extraordinarily noisy Morse code signals, and those signals splashed across a huge swathe of the radio part of the electromagnetic spectrum. Today we would call those transmissions interference. Indeed, today we would not be allowed to use spark gap transmitters, they're just too noisy. Back then, if just one ship was transmitting spark gap signals, the noisy transmission wouldn't be too much of a problem. But if more than one ship tried to transmit at the same time, then there would be a massive amount of interstation interference. It would be like 100 people in a tiny enclosed room all shouting at the tops of their voices. It was impossible for wireless operators in those days to tune out the interference caused by spark gap transmissions, which spread across the radio spectrum. Unlike later Morse code radio signals, the signals from a spark gap transmitter sounded like, well, electronic flatulence. Now, Jack Phillips, the wireless officer on the Titanic, had received the earlier iceberg warning report from the SS Mesaba, but, crucially, he did not pass that important message to the officers on the bridge of the Titanic who was steering the ship. It seems Phillips intended to pass the iceberg warning on, but only after he had cleared the backlog of passenger telegrams. The very important iceberg warning message sat on Phillips's desk under a paperweight. The fact that Jack Phillips had already received an iceberg warning message from the Mesaba might explain why, later, he signalled the wireless officer on the nearby steamship Californian, a man called Cyril Evans, who was trying to transmit further iceberg warning messages to all ships. Phillips' Morse code message to Evans on the Californian read, "Keep out, shut up, I'm working Cape Race." Cyril Evans, the wireless officer on the Californian, was, of course, also using a noisy spark gap transmitter, which explains why his iceberg warning signals were blotting out the distant signals coming from the Cape Race shore station. Phillips, it seems, was absolutely determined to clear his backlog of messages. Having been rebuked, Cyril Evans on the Californian dutifully closed down his transmitter and went to bed, and because of that, he missed the later distress signal sent out by Phillips after the Titanic had hit the iceberg. The crew of the Californian even saw the distress rocket sent up by the Titanic, but they did not respond. The rest, sadly, is history, and we know that nearly 1,500 passengers and crew from the Titanic lost their lives. Before moving on, if you ask anyone what the International Distress Signal is, they will probably tell you it is SOS or three dots, three dashes, and three dots in the Morse code. CQD rather than SOS was favoured by Marconi-employed wireless officers at the time. The White Star Line, who owned the Titanic, hired both the wireless equipment and the wireless officers from Marconi. Jack Phillips on the Titanic was a Marconi man, not a White Star employee. Listen out when you next hear a film about the sinking of the Titanic and you'll see the filmmakers tend to use SOS instead of CQD. That said, the two wireless officers on the Titanic did discuss using the new SOS distress signal rather than CQD. They apparently joked it might be the only time they would get to use this new signal. We'll come back to CQD shortly. So, Morse code, how widely has it been used, and is it still used today? If you watch any World War II films, especially films about the Royal Navy or the cracking of the German Enigma codes, then you're sure to hear Morse code being transmitted and received. The Morse code sound effects are played more for a dramatic effect than anything else. That said, the signal pulses that are used for telecommunication systems today are the direct descendants of the Morse code. Even today, the signals sent out over fibre optic cables are pulses broadly similar to Morse code dots and dashes, but of course, modern signals go very much faster. We don't call those modern day pulses dots and dashes anymore. We call them bits, ones and noughts. Ones and noughts as opposed to dots and dashes. And bit transmission speeds of over 1 terabit per second are not unusual. Terabit is a 1 followed by 12 noughts. In other words, a very large number. At terabyte transmission speeds, it would be possible to download the entire Game of Thrones television series in high definition in less than a second. Contrast that against the 20 to 25 words per minute a well-trained Morse code operator would be able to send or receive, and you will understand that clearly things have moved on considerably since those early days of telecommunications. And, incidentally, how can you work out how many words are being sent in a minute using Morse code, given different words have different numbers of letters? The answer is ARIS. The word Paris has been chosen as the standard word, and if you can transmit the word Paris 25 times within a minute, you are sending Morse code at 25 words a minute. Most everyone will know that the Morse code was invented by the American portrait painter and inventor Samuel Finley Breeze Morse, who was born in 1791. Whilst Morse code bears Samuel Morse's name, the early cable-based telegraph network that carried the Morse code signals were jointly developed by Morse, the physicist Joseph Henry, and a man described as a machinist called Alfred Vail. Now, it might have been that what we know as Morse code today could have been called the Vail code. Morse's early system of signaling involved using numbers to represent letters. Using Morse's method, the plain language text to be transmitted would be converted to numbers by the telegraphist at the send end, and at the receive end, the telegraphist there would use a code book to, in a sense, decipher the transmitted numbers back to the plain language text. Vail took the code system developed by Morse and enhanced it into what was known as the Morse Landline Code or the American Morse Code. The revised code used letters and numbers. American Morse code was not too dissimilar to the Morse code we use today. Then, in 1848, a German journalist, writer and musician, Friedrich Clemens Gerck, standardized the Morse code and called it the Hamburg code and that code went on to become the International Morse code some of us still use today. Kirk changed over half the Morse code letters and all of the numbers used in Vail's American Morse code. Kirk's Morse code was recognised by the International Telegraph Union in 1865. Kirk also standardised the length of the dots and dashes. A dash is 3 times the length of a dot, and the space between letters is the length of a dot. The International Morse code comprises all the letters of the alphabet, and the numbers from 0 through to 9, and some punctuation. In the early days of landline telegraphy, telegraphists would send Morse code using a Morse key. When the telegraphist pressed and released the key, intermittent pulses of electricity were delivered to the transmission line. The transmission lines were wires, usually strung pole to pole across the country. At the distant or receive end of those cables, the electrical pulses would cause an electromagnetic relay to energize or de-energize, or in technical language, make or break. Originally, the receive relay armature was attached to a primitive printing, more precisely inking machine, which would cause the Morse code dots and dashes to be inked onto a long paper tape which was moved through the receiving machinery using clockwork. The idea was that the telegraphist at the receive end would read the ink marks on the paper tape and translate the printed dots and dashes into plain language text. But those early telegraphists began to listen to the inker relay clicking and clacking, and rather than reading the paper tape, they listened to and read the clicks and clacks, or in other words, the dots and dashes. Eventually, the inking machines were discarded, and the relays that clicked and clacked became more sophisticated in the sound sense. They became more like musical instruments with sound boxes which amplified the clicks and clacks and made the clicking and clacking sounds more distinctive and more easily readable. And, to this day, people talk, probably with the inking machines in mind, about reading Morse code as if they were reading it from a paper tape. By the way, those clicks and clacks, sometimes known as idiumpty noises made by the receiving relays, led to the use of the word umpteen to describe a large but unspecified number. And incidentally, the reason a Morse key is called a key is because, for some reason, Alfred Vail felt that his sending device behaved like a key that would be used to open a door. I don't follow the logic, and perhaps he didn't either, because he called his early keying device a correspondent. Despite that, the words Morse key stuck, and we still talk about using Morse keys today. What we usually hear when we listen to World War II films is the International Morse code. Although some filmmakers seem to think that any meaningless and random stream of dots and dashes will do. If you tune to the radio frequencies used by amateur radio enthusiasts today, you will hear the International Morse code still being used and used widely. More about amateur radio later. So Morse code in its various forms was used globally on the landline telegraph system, which spread around the globe from the 1840s onward. Telegraph stations popped up in unusual places. There was, for example, a telegraph relay station in Alice Springs, Australia. In the 1890s, an Italian, Guglielmo Marconi, an entrepreneur and inventor, began experimenting with radio transmissions. Of course, in those early days, radio was known as wireless or the wireless telegraph. Marconi recognized that whilst messages could be sent around the world using the landline telegraph cable network, ships at sea were effectively disconnected from the shore when they were sailing between ports. Marconi, an early day Steve Jobs, spotted a clear gap in the telecommunications market. Marconi developed early ship-to-shore wireless transmitters based around the noisy spark gap transmitter I mentioned earlier. By 1904, Marconi was building wireless stations on both sides of the Atlantic, including the one at Cape Race. and we know that a spark gap transmitter transmitted what we would now call undesirable and unacceptable broadband interference. In the early days, whilst there were only two ships talking to each other using spark gap transmitters, that interference problem didn't matter because whilst one ship was transmitting Morse code, the other was listening and vice versa. However, as more ships became equipped with spark gap wireless transmitters, the level of interference between ships grew, so ships' wireless equipment had to be developed so that their signals created less interference and took up less bandwidth. There was a great step forward in technology terms in 1906 when an American, Lee de Forest, invented the thermionic valve known as the Audion valve, which could be used to amplify signals. The invention of the Audion valve led to the dramatic improvement of wireless technology and the demise of the noisy spark gap transmitter. And so, over time, radio systems were developed so that radio operators on the ships and elsewhere would hear those Morse code tones we hear in the World War II films I mentioned earlier. Spark gap transmitters were phased out and replaced with more efficient radio systems, which caused a great deal less interstation interference. That said, spark gap transmitters were not made illegal until 1929. Remember, the Titanic sank in 1912. I should mention here that the enduring nickname for a ship's radio officer was, in light of the spark gap transmitter, Sparks or Sparky. I did my Merchant Navy radio officer training in the early 1970s at the Hull College of Technology. At that time, all Merchant Navy deep sea ships were still required to carry a radio officer. Indeed, the ships were not allowed to sail without a radio officer on board. The radio officer's qualification was widely known as a ticket. It took 3 years full-time study at Radio College to earn the ticket, and during that 3 year period, prospective radio officers had to learn Morse code and be able to send and receive Morse code at 20 words per minute. So let's talk about using Morse code. First, how difficult is it to learn the Morse code? The answer is, it is not difficult at all to learn the Morse code, and some people talk, oddly, about learning the Morse code using the rhythm method. Here's an excerpt from an American Navy Morse code training film.
Rhythm is indeed the key to good sending. If your code is to mean anything to others in the radio net, then you've got to send rhythmically. Dits must be uniform and short. Das, uniform and long. Spacing exactly right. Very small, tight spaces between the dits and das in a character. As the operator will now demonstrate, with letters that are all dits or all das. Now the beat is trickier, but still easy enough to get in the characters that combine dits and das. Yankee, for example. No, slow it down. Da, di, da, da. That's a soldier changing step. Watch. Da, di, da, da. Yankee rhythm every time.
Let's learn just one letter in the Morse code. Now, I could tell you that the letter Q in Morse code is dash, dash, dot, dash. You might remember that. But before anything else, let me tell you that Morse code operators will verbalize Morse code, and rather than saying dash dash dot dash for the letter Q, which is a bit of a mouthful, they would say da da dit da for dash and dit for dot. Dits and das roll off the tongue more easily. Now let's see if I can get you to easily recognise the letter Q in Morse code. Think about the song, Here Comes the Bride, which, if you listen to it, has the sound da-da-di-da. Don't think too much about the formation of dots and dashes that form the letter Q in Morse code. Think about the song, Here Comes the Bride, which has the sound da-da-di-da. Think about those dots and dashes forming almost a single syllable or tune. I know it doesn't make sense, but stick with me. You learn the sound of a Morse code character rather than translating the dots and dashes in your mind as you receive the Morse code. If you think of the letter W as you would speak it, W comprises three syllables. Do you ever listen to the individual syllables? No, you listen to the overall makeup of the sound W. Morse code is in some ways similar, and with training, the human brain can pick out the characteristic sound of different Morse characters. If there was a Morse code signature tune to World War II, it would be the letter V for victory.
This is London. London calling in the home, overseas, and European services of the BBC, and through United Nations.
And if you listen to the start of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, you get the letter V in Morse code. Beethoven would not, of course, realise that because he died long before the Morse code arrived. During World War II, the BBC used drums to represent the letter V for victory at the start of their wartime radio broadcasts. And the similarity between Beethoven's Fifth Symphony didn't end there for the letter V in Morse code. Often the beginning of the symphony has been described as fate knocking at the door, and so the Morse letter V was, during World War II, significant, symbolic, and inspirational. So much so, the Germans did everything they could to prevent the letter V and the meaning behind it appearing in any form whatsoever. This was probably an early example of modern-day influencing, or if you're a Conservative Party special advisor, nudge theory. Moving on, here's something else which might be hard to believe. A trained radio operator can read Morse without really listening to it. I know that sounds kind of strange, but whilst the radio operator is writing down or typing Morse characters that are coming into his ears, that person can be thinking about something else, the next round of golf perhaps. This might seem decidedly odd, but think about driving a car with a manual gearbox. How many times during a journey do you change gear without really thinking about it? And how often have you reached a familiar destination in your car without thinking about or even remembering much about the journey you've just undertaken? My wife, who can take down shorthand, tells me the same applies. She tells me words come into your ears and magically travel down your arms to your hand and onto your notepad. But often, whilst taking down shorthand, her mind would be elsewhere. I hear that London cab drivers develop a slightly different, spatially aware brain to the rest of us. I wonder if, after a lot of training, people who can read Morse code, or take down shorthand, develop some kind of additional brain power. And on top of everything else, a trained radio operator can listen to several closely packed signals which overlap, like this. What he can do is mentally focus on the one wanted signal and ignore the rest. A truly experienced radio operator can send and receive Morse code and carry on a conversation with somebody standing nearby at the same time. Hard to believe, I know, but it's true. When in 1972 I joined my first ship, a deep sea salvage tug owned by United Towing of Hull, ship called the Statesman, Morse code was still the main, indeed the only method of data transmission. At that time, there were no satellites, there were no mobile telephones, and computers hadn't really arrived yet. Instead, around the world, there were hundreds of coast radio stations employing thousands of radio officers. Ships would communicate with the shore-based coast radio stations around the world. Getting a telegram from a ship to the final recipient involved quite a few people working together. If you were the radio officer on a British ship, likely or not, you would send and receive your telegrams, because all data was sent in telegram form, from and to Portishead Radio, which was located in Burnham-on-Sea, near to Bristol in Somerset. Portishead Radio, callsign GKA, was the world's busiest radio station and employed around 200 radio officers who monitored the airwaves 24 hours a day. Portishead Radio was on the air from 1928 until the year 2000. By the year 2000, ships began to rely completely on satellite communications, and Portishead Radio eventually closed down. It's hard to estimate how many millions of Morse code messages were sent and received by Portishead Radio over the years, but it is known that in 1974, Portishead Radio handled more than 20 million words, all sent or received using Morse code. Over the years, Morse code was used extensively by the military and, of course, by merchant ships at sea. It was used by the British Diplomatic Wireless Service for many years. United Nations used Morse code. Interpol had a Morse code radio network. Morse code was used by Reuters and other agencies. The successful interception and decoding of German Morse code transmissions by British codebreakers at Bletchley Park in Buckinghamshire was one of the reasons the Allies won the Second World War. Of course, all World War II secret agents who were dropped behind enemy lines used clandestine radio sets to send their Morse code messages back to their masters. Radio amateur enthusiasts, or hams as they're sometimes known, have been using Morse code since the early days of wireless, and radio amateur enthusiasts were recruited during World War II to help intercept German messages. They joined a service which became known as Y-Intercept. Some of the Y-Intercept stations went on to become GCHQ listening stations. And so, for a period of our history between the late 1800s and the 1980s, Morse code was widely used for global communications. Nowadays, most of the people who use Morse code are radio amateur enthusiasts. Those enthusiasts are keeping the Morse code alive. Sections of the radio amateur frequency bands are entirely devoted to Morse code, and every day you can hear hams from around the world chatting away using Morse code. Morse might have had its day, but it's a long way from extinction. And if you watch the film Independence Day, Morse code is what saves the day. And whilst you might believe that Morse code is on its last legs in the commercial or military sense, then think again. If you search around the airwaves, you'll still find some Morse code signals coming from unusual places. For example, if you have a radio, and if you can tune to 6607 kHz, you will hear a Morse code station with the call sign 4XZ. If you believe what you read on the internet, 4XZ is an Israeli Defense Service radio station based in Haifa, Israel. From time to time, 4XZ sends out coded messages comprising hundreds of sequential five-letter groups, which are pretty much the standard for enciphered messages. Who 4XZ is sending messages to is impossible to know, but somebody, somewhere, must be listening in. If you listen around some more, you might well hear Russian military radio stations using Morse code. As far as I'm aware, the Western military services have stopped using Morse code. Here's the thing, Morse code equipment is simple to build and use, and Morse code signals can get through when more sophisticated signals can't. By abandoning Morse code, we might just be missing a trick. Morse code is like a language. Linguistic professors might disagree, but then I'm not aware of many linguistics professionals who can read Morse. Here's an example. If you're at a crowded and noisy cocktail party, it is often difficult to hear what people are saying. But the hearing part of your brain might well hear your name if it is being called out across the room. It's the same with Morse code. You might not be listening closely to the noise coming from your radio, but if your call sign is sent, the hearing part of your brain will pick up those distinctive letters which make up your call sign. My first ship was called the Statesman, which had the call sign GSAA, which was very distinctive in Morse code terms. Somehow, the sound of my call sign would always penetrate the fog of noise that might be surrounding me at any time. Any radio officer's brain would also hear the Morse distress signal SOS if it is sent. The reason for that is when a distress signal SOS is sent, the letters are not sent individually. Any radio officer's brain would hear and detect the Morse distress signal SOS if it is sent. The reason for that is when the distress signal SOS is sent, the letters are not sent individually. Instead, the dot 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 dash 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 and dot 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 are run together to give a highly recognizable and distinctive sound of SOS. Those three letters, when run together, become a highly distinctive and most important character in their own right. Radio officers using Morse code use a great many abbreviations, slang, and codes in order to get the message over quickly and efficiently. Even today, people using Morse code will refer to each other as OM or old man. It isn't clear where this convention came from. When the Titanic was sinking, the wireless officer on the Titanic sent a message, "Come at once, we have struck a berg, it's a CQD, old man." CQ is an interesting two-letter combination used by radio operators. If an operator was sending out a general call to everyone, he or she would send the letters CQ repeatedly. CQ is the abbreviated form of Seek You. When radio amateurs wish to make contact with other radio amateurs, they'll often use the CQ signal several times followed by their call sign. They might even send CQDX, which means they are looking for long-distance contacts only. DX is shorthand for long distance. Then there are the numbers 73 and 88. 73 means best wishes, and 88 means hugs and kisses. You would probably use 88 if you were a man talking to a YL, or in other words, a young lady. An XYL is a wife, a description that might not go down too well with feminists. I'm not sure if there is a code or abbreviation for husband other than OM, old man. Three-letter Q codes are widely used during Morse code conversations. There are hundreds of Q codes and they are widely used even today. QSY means change to another frequency. For example, QSY 14123 means change frequency to 14123 kHz or 14.123 MHz. QRT means stop sending, and perhaps the most infamous Q code of all is QSD, which literally means your keying is defective, but everyone knows it really means your Morse code sending skills are terrible. Sending QSD to a radio officer would be very insulting, but not nearly as bad as 4Q2. I'll leave you to work that one out. This brings me on to what is known as radio operator's fist. Morse code can be a bit like handwriting. Before automatic keys were used, and more about them later, Morse code was sent using a straight key. This was effectively a spring-loaded door knocker which the operator would press up and down in order to make the Morse code signal. A straight key was sometimes known as a brass basher. And rather like handwriting or an accent, people send Morse code using a straight key in slightly different ways. This was very important during World War II because clandestine radio operators who had been dropped behind enemy lines could be recognised by their style of sending Morse code or their fist. The radio operators in the UK listening for these secret agents would recognise the fist of an agent who was sending messages from France, Holland and so on. And if the fist changed, that might suggest the Germans had captured the agent and were using his or her radio to send false messages to the British. Radio officers could suffer from what was known as glass wrist. This was something like repetitive strain injury, and it meant the Morse code the operator was sending became distorted and unreadable, again, rather like bad handwriting. The solution was to use a sideswiper or paddle key. Sideswipers come in all shapes and sizes, but basically, rather than moving the Morse key up and down, a paddle or paddles on the key are moved from side to side between finger and thumb. The sideswiper I've been using for over 40 years now is a twin paddle ETM-3C electronic squeeze key. You can't buy them anymore. The two paddles are located side by side a few millimetres apart. When I press and hold the right paddle, the electronics in the key generate a continuous series of dashes. If I press and hold the left paddle, the keyer will send a continuous series of dots. If I squeeze and hold the paddles together, the key will generate a continuous stream of dots followed by dashes. So by paddling the key, I can create my perfect Morse code characters. Using a sideswiper makes it much easier to send a long message, but it also means my fist would not be recognisable by the dots and dashes which are automatically generated by the key. That said, the way I compose my messages and the characters I use give a clue to who I am. For example, I would always start my transmissions with the letter S and N run together. S and N run together means, informally, get ready, I'm about to send you something. It could be argued that sideswipers take some of the flavour out of Morse code. It's probably hard to believe, but it is possible to demonstrate sarcasm or annoyance with Morse code, but with a straight key you can. A good example would be sending the letter R, which is dot dash dot. R can mean Roger, yes, or affirmative. If you would like to accentuate the Roger response, you can lengthen the dash between the two dots that form the R. Lengthening the dash emphasises the affirmative response. Another common drawn-out response is the question mark, dot dot, dash dash, dot dot. Dragging out the middle two dashes, making them much longer, is perhaps a way of saying, as we do these days, really? Are you serious? And so that's it for now, and I hope you've enjoyed this podcast about Morse code. It only remains for me to send the letters TNX, AR, and VA to you. TNX, or TKS, means thanks for listening. AR means I've come to the end of my message. And VA means I've come to the end of my transmission. My next podcast will be all about the wonderful world of electronic eavesdropping, and so please stay tuned to our website, bamfspy.com, for further details. Thank you for listening. Goodbye now.